Our speaker today is Dr. William Pierce, the chairman of the National Alliance, which is the world's foremost organization working for the long-term interest of white Americans and for people of European ancestry wherever they may live.
Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000, Justice versus Power.
Hello. I received a telephone call this week from a woman I know in California. She's a member of my organization, the National Alliance, and she's using her computer and her website to disseminate information about a problem I've spoken about with you on several occasions in the past, and that is the growing Jewish trade in white sex slaves. Organized Jewish crime gangs recruit young women in Russia, Ukraine, and other countries of Eastern Europe whose economies were ruined by decades under Jewish communism. The Jewish recruiters promised the young women high-paying employment in Israel as secretaries or receptionists, then forced them to become prostitutes after they arrived. The government of Israel doesn't interfere. The woman I know in California who's helping to publicize this terrible and growing white slavery problem called to exchange information with me on recent developments. But she also shared with me her frustration over the difficulty of getting the public to pay attention and to become indignant. Even when they know what's going on, people are just too jaded, too passive, too lacking in self-confidence to stand up to the Jewish assault on our race, she lamented to me. And unfortunately, that's true of most of the public. I try to break through this public passivity with these broadcasts by choosing topics that should catch people's imagination and rouse their indignation. Although it's difficult for me to imagine anything more provocative than this Jewish exploitation of young white women. One thing that many people respond to is anything which is blatantly unfair, anything which offends our people's inborn sense of fairness. I'll try that approach today. I'm sure you've all heard about the ongoing and very profitable campaign of the Jews to collect reparations from everyone in sight for their alleged sufferings during the Second World War, which ended more than 55 years ago. They've been cashing in big on the so-called Holocaust. They've bribed politicians in half the state legislatures in America to pass laws requiring that all public school children take classes on the Holocaust and be taught about the unique victim status of the Jews, about how they have suffered more than anyone else and therefore deserve more in the way of compensation from the Gentile world. They tell us that their reason for harping on their Holocaust all the time is to prevent it from happening again. But really, the main reason is that they're making tons of money from it. On previous programs, I've talked with you about how they've parlayed their losses during the Second World War into a steady flow of gold into the pockets of Jews in Israel and around the world during the past half century. Scores of billions of dollars from Germany, from Switzerland, from France, from the Netherlands, from Britain. I've told you how the United States government acted as the Jews' bully boy, coercing other countries into coughing up whatever the Jews demanded. Billions of dollars for dormant bank accounts in Switzerland. More than $60 billion in reparations from Germany. Hundreds of millions of dollars from France and the Netherlands for property the Jews claimed belonged to them before the war. Then back to Germany last year with a claim for more billions of dollars for unpaid wages to Jews who say that they were forced to work in the German defense industry during the war. And finally, billions of dollars in claims from the United States because many American companies were doing business in Germany before the war. The American media and the U.S. government have been behind the Jews all the way in the enforcement of these claims. Well, you know, the Jews weren't the only ones who had losses during the Second World War. And the Germans weren't the only ones who forced prisoners to work. The biggest employer of forced labor by far was our gallant communist ally, the Soviet Union. The Japanese also forced many American prisoners of war to work. When the Jews began demanding compensation last year from German companies for work the Jews were forced to do in Europe during the war, their Gentile Stepan Petschitz in the California legislature hastily passed a new law allowing persons who had done forced labor to sue their former employers for wages. The California law clearly was intended to allow Jews to sue German companies and American companies with branches in Germany. Well, sir, a number of very insensitive American veterans from the Pacific Theater of Operations who had been forced to work in Japanese coal mines as prisoners during the war just didn't get it. They didn't understand that the law was intended to benefit Jews only and that Gentiles need not apply. So they sued the Japanese companies who had used them as slave laborers more than 55 years ago. Among the defendant Japanese companies were Mitsubishi Corporation, Nippon Steel Corporation, and a number of the other largest Japanese companies. As you can imagine, the powers that be were not happy about these uppity Gentiles trying to horn in on the Jews' private racket. I mean, really, if everyone starts demanding equal rights with the Jews, where will it end? The Jews will have no special privileges at all. Well, Madeleine Albright put a stop to the suit against the Japanese companies in a hurry. She has vigorously supported the efforts by her fellow Jews to extort reparations from everyone in sight. But she had her State Department tell the court in California that the suit by the veterans should be dismissed. And that's exactly what happened on Thursday of last week. You can read about it yourself in the September 21st Associated Press report from San Francisco. The report begins, and I quote, "Surviving World War II prisoners of war who allege they were used as slave laborers by some of Japan's biggest corporations cannot seek compensation from the companies," a federal judge ruled Thursday. End quote. Then the judge told the veterans, in effect, that they should be thankful they're still alive, and that should be enough for them. Now, I'll stick my neck out and make a little prediction here. When the Jews' lawsuits against American companies they claim made a profit from Jewish labor in Germany during the war come to court, the verdict will be different. The State Department will take the side of the Jews, and the Jews will get every cent they're demanding. And anyone who tells them that they should be thankful to still be alive will be condemned as a hater and an anti-Semite. That's my prediction, because that's the way the system is rigged. What do you think? But really, isn't that something? American veterans who were abused atrociously as prisoners of war by the Japanese can't get a cent from the Japanese. The Clinton government, acting through Madeleine Albright's State Department, takes the side of the Japanese. But when the Jews, who had never set foot in America until after the war, never served this country in any way, make claims against Americans, they'll get everything they demand, and they'll get it with the help of the U.S. government. It's good to remember that the veterans who last week were denied compensation from the Japanese for their slave labor were fighting for America in a war that, at the root, was a war to destroy the enemies of the Jews, a war to destroy Hitler and his government. In that war, the American companies from which the Jews now are demanding compensation were indispensable to the American war effort, regardless of any profit they may have made from German subsidiaries. without the participation of the Ford Motor Company, for example, and the other big American companies from which the Jews are demanding money now, America couldn't have won the war. America wouldn't have had any trucks or tanks or jeeps without Ford and General Motors, from whom the Jews are seeking blood money. The Jews, in effect, are demanding money from us for saving their hides in the Second World War. And the men who fought to save their hides don't get anything but a kick in the teeth. Now, perhaps you believe that the Jews shouldn't be blamed for trying to take us to the cleaners, if we're stupid enough to let ourselves be taken to the cleaners. But what do you think about the attitude of our government? And what about the attitude of the mass media, which in fact is ultimately more important than that of the government? In the coming months, the media will be full of stories about the poor, deserving Jews who are entitled to compensation from those wicked American companies which may have made a profit from their labor in Germany before or during the war. But I doubt that you'll be seeing much beyond that one Associated Press report I cited about the inability of American veterans who were slave laborers for the Japanese to collect compensation. How does that strike your sense of fairness? I'll give you another example. In South Carolina, there's an unreconstructed Southern businessman named Maurice Bessinger. Mr. Bessinger owns a chain of barbecue restaurants, Piggy Parks, and he manufactures his own brand of barbecue sauce, which, until a few days ago, was sold in more than 90 Walmart stores in 6 southern states. Then some politically correct busybody complained to Walmart management that Bessinger displays the Confederate flag at his Piggy Park restaurants and demanded that Walmart stop selling his barbecue sauce because his display of Confederate flags offended blacks. Excuse me, African Americans. Well, of course, during the past few days, Walmart has been falling all over itself in its scramble to remove Bessinger's sauce from its shelves. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because Walmart management believes it would be immoral to continue selling Bessinger's barbecue sauce? I'll guarantee that's not the reason. Walmart couldn't care less about the political beliefs of its suppliers. The reason is that Walmart is scared to death that the busybody who demanded it stop selling the sauce will go to the media with his complaint, and Walmart knows what position the media will take on the matter. Walmart is afraid that the media will stir up a boycott. Now, suppose that I went to Walmart with the complaint that some product Walmart is selling is manufactured by a company owned by a Jew who has given money to Israel. And believe me, there are thousands of such products on Walmart's shelves because most Jewish manufacturers have given money to Israel. An example of such a product is almost any video cassette with a Hollywood movie on it. Suppose I said in my complaint that Israel routinely tortures Palestinian prisoners, illegally stockpiles biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons, and is home to the largest sex slave trade in the world, that it is immoral to sell products which provide money to Israel, and that I would go to the media with my complaint if Walmart continued selling the Jewish product. Well, of course, I'd be laughed out of Walmart's administrative offices, because Walmart knows that the media won't have anything negative to say about Walmart's sale of products made by a Jewish supporter of Israel. The point of my comments today is that it is not morality or justice which governs the world in which we live. It is power. Despite what you were taught in school, we don't live in a country governed by laws. We live in a country governed by men. The laws mean whatever the most powerful men say they mean, and they are enforced accordingly. Many years ago, I testified in Washington before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations when it was holding public hearings on the ratification of the so-called Genocide Convention, which would require the United States to enact speech crime legislation similar to that in Canada and many European countries. That is, legislation which would criminalize any speech or writing which any identifiable racial, ethnic, or religious group might find offensive or threatening. While waiting to testify, I spoke with another witness who also was waiting to testify. I found that he shared my views on many things, but whereas I intended to testify against ratification, he intended to testify in favor of the Genocide Convention. I was puzzled, and I asked him why. In turn, he asked me, "Have you ever seen the Talmud? It's full of hatred and offensive statements against Gentiles." I answered him, "Yes, I know that, but so what? Don't you see," he said, "the Genocide Convention will get all the rabbis locked up because of what's in their Talmud, and then the Jews will be out of business." Well, I was left speechless by the man's astounding naivety. He really believed that speech crime laws would be applied even-handedly to Jews and Gentiles alike. I didn't even waste my breath trying to make him understand that the world doesn't work that way, that it doesn't matter half so much what laws are on the books as it does how those laws are interpreted and enforced by the men with the power to enforce them, that speech crime laws will be enforced against us, but not against the Jews, as long as the Jews have the power of the media on their side. And the general public would never even be aware of the hypocrisy and injustice involved, because they wouldn't have a clue about the Talmud unless it were dramatized for them on television in soap operas over and over and over again until it finally sank in. I've encountered the same sort of foolishness from well-meaning but very naive men who have spent a great deal of time researching the law and have told me that such and such an amendment to the Constitution was never properly ratified and therefore is invalid. For example, I've had men tell me in all seriousness that the 16th Amendment, which in 1913 laid the basis for the federal income tax, is invalid, and so none of us really have to pay income taxes. They believe that if they present the results of their legal research in court, the court will have to agree that they don't have to pay their income taxes. When I warned them that they were likely to end up in prison, they wanted to show me their legal research to prove that they were right. I told them that their legal research is entirely irrelevant. What is relevant is that the politicians, including the judges in the federal courts, are dependent on the money collected from income taxes. Income tax money keeps the public trough at which they feed full, and they aren't about to let any defect in the law empty their trough. We could argue with them about it, but in the end, all that will matter is that they have more armed thugs at their disposal than we do. I'm not saying that all laws are completely irrelevant, that it doesn't make any difference at all what the law says. The government still has to keep up a pretense of fairness and justice. The politicians themselves don't care about justice, and the system of which they are parts is thoroughly corrupt, but it is important to them to keep the public from realizing that. And the mass media are the key to what the public realizes and what it doesn't. If the average person doesn't see something on television repeatedly, he won't be aware of it, and his powers of discrimination are such that it doesn't make any difference whether what he sees on television is true or false. If he sees it often enough, he'll believe it. And if he doesn't see it on television, he won't even be aware of it. The media are the key to what the government can and cannot get away with. As long as we have a political system where the leaders of the government are chosen by a popular vote, the media will be the key to who gets elected and to how the government behaves. The media are the key to the behavior of the courts, the key to how a particular law will be interpreted and enforced, the key to the attitude of a federal judge toward a claim for compensation for slave labor. The media are the key to the behavior of big business, such as Walmart, and they are the key to the public's perception of and reaction to Israel's slave trade in white women. We all wish that we had a moral government and a just court system, but as long as we don't, it is power for which we must strive, not morality or justice. Only after we have power can we hope for morality or justice. And the key to power is neither guns nor money, but it is the ability to communicate effectively with the public, the ability to influence the public's perception of the world. If the key to power were simply money, then Bill Gates wouldn't have to be worried now about the Clinton government's effort to destroy Microsoft. Last year, he should have taken some of the $90 billion or so dollars that he had at that time and bought a couple of television networks. Then he could make those Jews in the Clinton Justice Department back off in a hurry. Well, it's not quite that simple. You must not only buy a television network, you also must staff it properly and use it intelligently. There's not much point in buying CBS from Sumner Redstone, for example, if the same Jews at CBS will remain in charge of editing the news and designing the entertainment programming. You'll have to find hundreds of talented and properly motivated people who are as good as the Jews are at shaping public perceptions, and then you'll have to rebuild the whole network with these new people. We can't do that now. We can't outshoot the government, and we can't outspend the Jews. But we can, nevertheless, continue building our ability to communicate with the public. Without a television network, we can't influence the lemmings, but we can influence the 2% or so of the public that is capable of independent thinking. And we are influencing more and more people in that 2%. The National Alliance member I mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast, the woman in California who is using the internet to help spread awareness of the Jewish trade in white women, is only one of thousands. I hear from dozens of new people every day, people I have never heard from previously, who have been awakened by the American Distant Voices message or are in the process of being awakened. If we want a moral government and a system of justice which is truly just, if we want ever to have a healthy white world again for our grandchildren and their grandchildren, then we must have power. And for the time being, the way to that power is to continue reaching and influencing the independent-minded 2% of our people. We need more money, of course, and one of these days we may need more guns. But for now, we need more moral individuals to wake up to their responsibility. We need more individuals with a sense of justice to use their intelligence and their talents to help us in our effort to communicate with our people. We need more people like that woman in California. And we're getting them. Eventually, we'll get the lemmings too. Thanks for being with me again today.